From Cherokee to Currituck, from the largest city to the smallest town, and from the state house to the schoolhouse, it's Carolina Journal Radio, your weekly news magazine discussing North Carolina's most important public policy events and issues.
Welcome to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. During the next hour, Donna Martinez and I will explore some major issues affecting our state. This week's edition of Carolina Journal Radio is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, working every day to transform the health system for North Carolinians. More information available at todaywe.com. The Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman took his free market message to a national TV audience with the program Free to Choose. You'll hear from the leader of a network following in Friedman's footsteps. The University of North Carolina system is promoting two cost-saving programs for its students. You'll learn details. Three Republican state senators want a new bipartisan group to probe voting irregularities from the 2018 campaign. You'll learn why. Plus, you'll hear the recommendations of a special group studying safety in North Carolina's public schools. Those topics are just ahead. First, Donna Martinez joins us with the Carolina Journal headline.
Since 2011, North Carolinians have enjoyed more than $15.8 billion worth of tax relief, all that thanks to the tax reform efforts of fiscal conservatives in the North Carolina General Assembly. In fact, every state operating budget passed since 2011 has also kept spending at or below the growth of population plus inflation. So that's all good news. But our next guest is urging caution when budget writers begin formulating the next two-year budget plan. Joe Coletti is senior fellow with the John Locke Foundation. He focuses on fiscal issues and joins us now. Joe, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be here.
You write very interestingly, I think, about a number of challenges that the General Assembly will face when they start putting pen to paper, so to speak. Let's talk about some of those. First of all, economic headwinds.
Yeah, this is, we are, but the budget that they'll be putting together is a biennium budget. So that will take us into through June of 2021, which will be entering the 13th year of economic expansion. And right now we're pretty close to the longest expansion in post-war history. So things are, and we're starting to see housing starts slowing, seeing the effects of the tariffs and a number of other items that raise kind of some caution about what the economy is going to be. And when you're trying to take a look 13 years after the recovery started, now there's no guarantee that things are going to slow down, but things start to pile up. And so that's what we're starting to run into. And when you're trying to project out 2 years of spending, you really have to be cautious about how long this recovery can last.
And, of course, many, many people invested in the stock market through 401k plans, pension plans, et cetera. And, boy, has it been volatile, up and down, up and down. And so that may help our listeners get a sense of what you're talking about, that it's really tough to forecast what's happening.
Right. In the past year, last year, we had really good, really strong stock market returns that led to capital gains returns and high tax revenues because of that. This year, the stock market, you know, is about flat, maybe a little down. We'll see. You know, we've got a couple of weeks left, but the stock market like you said, we've all experienced that in our own portfolios or our own 401ks, and so all of that has an impact on is bearing the effects of that uncertainty about the economy.
Joe, you also write about tax reforms at both the state and federal level that are going to factor into this, and also some new budget rules that will make it a little bit tougher. What about those things?
Yeah, well, the tax reform at the federal level helped us a fair amount this year in terms of revenue. We saw in November, December, the last 3 months of 2017, the tax collection started to slow down as individuals and businesses started making decisions about when do I recognize revenues. And so we saw a big bump in revenues in January of 2018. And that is still playing out this year as tax revenues would likely be higher October, November, December of this year compared to a year ago. All of those effects are going to go away. All of those revenue enhancements at the state level are going to disappear in January, right? It's just going to be business as usual at that point. At the same time, state tax reductions are going to take effect. And so there's $1 billion over the course of a year, which means that in the first 6 months, we're going to lose $500 million of state tax revenue from lower corporate taxes, lower personal income taxes, higher standard deduction, all really good things from an individual perspective, really difficult things for budget writers to start working with.
Let's talk a little bit more about the revenue side. We'll get to the spending side in a minute, but I got to tell you, you're making my hair hurt just with the, what you're describing here. So really, if you are one of the people responsible in the legislature for trying to put together a revenue forecast and make some decisions based on how much money you think the state is going to have for the operating budget, what do you do?
Yeah, that's why we're starting to raise the questions. Is that
that's why you're saying be cautious?
Yeah, on the revenue side, one of the things that the Department of Revenue enacted was that online retailers from outside of North Carolina have to collect taxes for North Carolina. Mm-hmm. There's big expectations about what that's going to provide, but there's also a number of things that urge caution on how much that's going to generate. So they're looking for where can they get new revenue. At the same time, we spent a portion of the rainy day fund. We had built up a $2 billion rainy day fund. $750 million of that went to Hurricane Florence relief and recovery. And so we had we've gone from $2 billion down to $1.25 billion.
A legitimate expense, of course, perfectly
good things to be doing, and there's probably going to be some desire to spend more money to provide additional relief. But it just adds to the, you know, you build up that rainy day fund for a recession or for a natural disaster. You don't expect both of them to come on the heels of one another. And so hopefully there is still time to rebuild that savings reserve back up.
It sounds as if what you're saying is that padding, essentially the padding, that extra cash sitting off on the side should something bad happen. Well, one bad thing has happened, and that was the hurricane. And so we've dipped into that. But that means that right now, at least, there is less money in that account sitting over there. Should there be some sort of economic downturn like you've described, or somehow the forecasts are off. So all sorts of things that are factoring into that. That's the revenue side. Let's talk about the spending side.
Yeah.
Now, as I mentioned, over the past few years, we've been on a pretty good spending trend in that people have tried to spend, the people in charge of the legislature, in a more restrained fashion. But again, Joe, you are saying that things are starting to creep up in the spending. Tell us about that.
Yeah, well, we've had a well-deserved raise for teachers, but that there's going to be more desire to continue increasing the pay there. Mentioned the hurricanes, that there's probably going to be some desire there. We have more money being sent aside. You mentioned earlier the budget reforms. More money is going to be set aside for capital and for debt reserves. More money will be set aside for the savings reserve already in the budget. And we have desires for prison reform, criminal justice reform, for Medicaid changes. There's already some transformation that's happening. They've set aside some money for that, but the governor wants to expand Medicaid. So there are a lot of spending challenges, desires for more spending that both the Democrats who are now have a seat at the table and the Republicans will want to have. And so that's where the spending thing is going to come in, and that's where the real challenge is going to be, is how to tamp those down to keep the amount of spending below the amount of revenues that we're getting in.
Joe, you bring up a really important point, and it relates to politics. In the 2018 midterm elections, the Democrats took over seats. They regained power in the General Assembly. The Republicans still in control, but definitely the Democrats would appear to have much more leverage. We also have a Democratic governor who will be much more part of the conversation. So how do those who want to keep spending in check, how do they do that when they're going to have to be a little bit more perhaps open to other ideas?
Well, one of the huge advantages that fiscal conservatives have now is that there is no threat of a shutdown at the state level. If they don't come to an agreement by June 30th, when the next fiscal year starts, the current budget stays in place. And then you have no growth and no worries.
Joe Coletti is Senior Fellow with the John Locke Foundation. Joe, thank you.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Much more Carolina Journal Radio to come in just a moment.
This week's edition of Carolina Journal Radio is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, working every day to transform the health system for North Carolinians. More information available at todaywe.com.
Voters have spoken in North Carolina. How can you make sense of what they said about the legislature, Congress, the courts, the Constitution? Carolina Journal has you covered. In print each month, online every day. Carolina Journal is your source for up-to-the-minute information about North Carolina state government policies and their impact on you. Carolina Journal offers in-depth analysis of the election's aftermath, then looks ahead to 2019. How will elections affect your family, your wallet, your schools, your business? Find out in the free Carolina Journal newspaper, online at carolinajournal.com. Carolina Journal, your number one source for government news that affects you. Visit carolinajournal.com today. Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. The Nobel Prize-winning economist Milton Friedman died in 2006, but his ideas live on, and that includes the concepts he expressed in the popular television series Free to Choose. Our next guest helps bring those ideas to new viewers every day through new projects. Robert Chatfield is president and CEO of the Free to Choose Network. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Mitch.
First of all, tell us about the Free to Choose Network. What is it, and what is it that you're trying to do?
As you may have surmised, we are the original film company that produced Milton Friedman's Free to Choose series. A little trivia for you is that the book actually came out after the film. Most people are unaware of that. But our founder, Bob Chittister, sort of created this idea of how do we get Milton's ideas out there. And it was a response to a public television program that I believe was a 13-part series on Keynes. And somebody from public television said, we should have another side of this here. And Bob says, well, we can do it in 10 because Milton's much more efficient. So,
and so this company produced the Free to Choose series, which
Correct.
Was on
mm-hmm.
PBS. People
yep.
may remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And then it became a book.
Yeah.
But now, 12 years after Milton Friedman is gone, you're mm-hmm. still putting together projects.
I was going to say 40 years after that project, we're still going strong as a film studio. So we still produce documentary films. Our primary outlet is still public television. So UNC TV around here will often air our programs. We are still looking to figure out how to reach the masses that haven't heard the message yet. And I think that's probably the key differentiator for us and a lot of people that might be considered libertarian, conservative, et cetera, is we go out of our way to really go out and try to look for the people who have never heard this message before.
And the message is still the same message about mm-hmm. the value mm-hmm. of policies that mm-hmm. promote freedom and
Correct.
Individual liberty
mm-hmm.
and letting markets work.
And most people consider these conservative ideas or libertarian ideas. Milton never considered it that way. Milton considered himself a self-described radical. And that's one of the things that we continue to say is that we're not pushing a conservative agenda. What we're pushing are winning ideas. And these winning ideas essentially are, you know, if you leave people alone, let them choose what they want to be able to do. In general, they'll choose well and they'll be happier people.
One of the things about Free to Choose that set it apart from what was there before is this was not a book. This was not something with a bunch of charts and graphs or mm-hmm. Talking heads and academics. Basically, mm-hmm. Milton Friedman, though he was very intellectual and an academic, mm-hmm. was telling stories that just normal, everyday people could understand. Is that still the goal?
And absolutely. And Milton was coached along well, as I said, by our founder, Bob Chittister. It lasted him a lifetime in terms of the coaching there. But we'll go out to – we just did a series on Adam Smith called The Real Adam Smith, for example. Is he still relevant today? Well, let's get on a Maersk ship and go around the world and find out if Adam Smith is still relevant today by looking at trade, specialization, and other matters like that. We did a program called India Awakes, where we went and saw what's happening in India. Almost anywhere we go through where we see them making reforms towards a more market-based economy, we'll still travel the world, we'll still find those stories, and we'll still put those stories on air.
Do you see that people who see these programs, some of them will have the light bulb go off and go, oh, yes, this does make sense. I get it now.
One of the funniest stories was a colleague of mine was in a taxi cab in New York and was just talking to the cab driver. The cab driver says, yeah, I saw this thing on Adam Smith. What an interesting guy he is. And the colleague was not from our organization. He says, you know, I'm going to see that film producer right now. I hope you don't mind if I tell him that. So I think, yeah, the light bulb still goes off for a lot of people. Again, they're just not exposed to the ideas. Nobody really gets a giant economics curriculum in high school. If you went through college, you might have taken a course or two in this. But unless you're well-versed in it, these continue to be esoteric ideas for many. And the more we can turn them into stories that people understand, the more people realize economics really boils down to choices. And if you are free to choose, again, you're more happy.
We are chatting with Robert Chatfield, who is the president and CEO of the Free to Choose Network. And you mentioned that people may have had an economics course in college, probably still scarred by thinking of supply and demand curves and econometrics and all of the jargon. How difficult is it to translate these concepts, some of which are intuitive, but others are not? How difficult is it to translate these concepts into things that people who don't have that economics background or don't want to have to think about economics can understand?
I'll take you to our latest production. It's a film called Sweden, Lessons for America, and that has a question mark at the end of it, by the way, about Bernie Sanders said, America should be more like the Nordic countries. We should be more like Sweden. And we proceeded to go in and take a real deep dive into some of those statistics. But how do you tell those statistics? It's not, you know, we have very few graphs in this documentary film. But there are a couple that really point out some ideas to you. And as I said, you hit it on the head there with regards to not having the supply and demand graphs. You can't do that. But what you can talk about, what happened with tax rates by showing people who were literally driven out of Sweden because of the tax rates. And they were the Swedish celebrities. You know, the author of Pippi Longstockings, Ingmar Bergman, the famous film producer. These people were driven out of their native country because of the tax rate. And when the labor union started to take over more and more of the companies and the entrepreneurship went away, what happened? And so we tell those things through the stories. You're not going to be able to say, oh, yeah, tax rates of 102% are punitive. Everybody understands that component. But if you can tell it through the eyes of the story and how it impacted even the people in Sweden, then it seems to have more resonates more with the people who are watching this here to say, ah, yeah, now I seem to get this. The idea that Sweden is a social democracy is really a falsehood.
This work, as you said earlier, goes back 40 years, and we have seen the media landscape change quite a bit over that time. Even over the past few years, people are getting their information in new ways. They don't really watch TV or films as much. People get their information from their phones, through the internet. Does that create challenges for the Free to Choose Network about how do we get this valuable information to people so they'll actually see it and hear it?
There's two avenues we're still going through. We still go through public television as our distribution outlet for a couple of reasons. One is if you're a school teacher that wants to be able to use this and it was shown on public television, it has sort of a stamp of approval. That somebody else has sort of vetted this product out there and that it's, you know, safe for general consumption, if you will. And again, I don't know what's so scary about an idea that says, you know, people who are free tend to be happier than those who aren't. But there is this concept that, oh my gosh, you know, for some reason the conservative right wing has a monopoly on freedom, therefore nobody else can have this and it's bad. So public television, as I said, reaching out to that audience and making sure we're spreading that message through there in a broad form. Also make sure that we're getting audiences of 500 to a million people on a regular basis for what we're putting out. And it's a diverse audience, as we well know. The side question you asked on that one is more about the fragmented market and people having to go out and search and find things. And I think that's where everybody's facing the challenge there. But I think if you push this out through channels, as I said, public education, public television, and still use the purpose of mass media, which is not to hit a targeted swath of audience that already agrees with your message, but to try to show other people, maybe there's another way you can think about this. I think we still do a good job for there, and I don't think we should be ignoring those markets.
Our time is running short, but if people want to learn more about Free to Choose Network, what's the best thing for them to do?
I would go to www.freetochoose.tv, as in television. They can download any of our programs there for free. There's also some additional information with regards to that. But that's the best spot to just go see what we've been doing for the past 30 years.
All right. Freetochoose.tv, the president and CEO of the Free to Choose Network, is Robert Chatfield. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Mitch.
And we'll have more on Carolina Journal Radio in just a moment.
Did you know you can now advance freedom and free markets just by shopping with Amazon? It's true. Online shopping is now a great way to support the John Locke Foundation. Just shop using the Amazon Smile program and designate us, the Locke Foundation, to receive a portion of your purchase amount. That's right. You shop and Amazon donates money to us, the John Locke Foundation. So here's how it works. Log on to smile.amazon.com. Amazon Smile, it's the same Amazon you know. Same products, same prices. But here's what's better. Amazon donates 0.5% of the price of your eligible purchases to us, the John Locke Foundation. So try it. Be sure to designate the Locke Foundation as the nonprofit you want to support. It's that easy. So now, not only will you enjoy what you buy, you'll also support freedom. Don't forget, log on to smile.amazon.com today. Buy something nice and help defend freedom. Help support the John Locke Foundation.
Voters have spoken in North Carolina. How can you make sense of what they said about the legislature, Congress, the courts, the Constitution? Carolina Journal has you covered. In print each month, online every day. Carolina Journal is your source for up-to-the-minute information about North Carolina state government policies and their impact on you. Carolina Journal offers in-depth analysis of the election's aftermath, then looks ahead to 2019. How will elections affect your family, your wallet, your schools, your business? Find out in the free Carolina Journal newspaper, online at carolinajournal.com. Carolina Journal, your number one source for government news that affects you. Visit carolinajournal.com today.
If you love freedom, we've got great news to share with you. Now you can find the latest news, views, and research from conservative groups across North Carolina all in one place, NorthCarolinaConservative.com. It's one-stop shopping for North Carolina's freedom movement. At NorthCarolinaConservative.com, you'll find links to John Locke Foundation blogs on the day's news, CarolinaJournal.com reporting and quick takes, Carolina Journal radio interviews, TV interviews featuring CJ reporters and Locke Foundation analysts, opinion pieces and reports on higher education from the James G. Martin Center for Academic Renewal, commentary and polling data from the Civitas Institute, and news and views from the North Carolina Family Policy Council. That's right, all in one place, NorthCarolinaConservative.com. That's North Carolina spelled out, conservative.com. NorthCarolinaConservative.com. Try it today.
This week's edition of Carolina Journal Radio is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, working every day to transform the health system for North Carolinians. More information available at todaywe.com.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. The UNC system is spending some money to tell prospective college students and their parents how they can save money. System President Margaret Spellings explains.
We Promise is a $1 million campaign funded by the General Assembly to raise awareness of two bold initiatives to make college more affordable, the NC Promise Tuition Plan and the Fixed Tuition Program. The NC Promise Tuition Plan, which took effect this fall, dropped tuition to just $500 a semester for in-state students at Elizabeth City State University, Western Carolina University, and UNC Pembroke. And we have seen big results through increased enrollments, rising transfer numbers, and more students returning after having left school than ever before. Enrollments are up 6% at Western, 14% at UNCP, and 19% at ECSU. Transfer numbers are up between 40 and 60% at all three institutions. And data from UNC Pembroke shows a more than 60% increase in the number of students who return to school after having dropped out. The fixed tuition program, which began in 2016, ensures that tuition stays the same for North Carolina students at any of our 16 universities for 4 years of continuous enrollment. It has provided predictability and affordability to our 160,000 in-state undergraduates and serves as a great incentive for students to stay continuously enrolled. We should be proud of these ambitious efforts. They stand out nationally, they put college within reach of more families, and they defy the trend of rising college costs. They are a worthy extension of North Carolina's legacy of affordability.
Polling data suggests the new campaign makes sense.
Gallup has done some polling in partnership with the My Future NC Commission that shows that only 14% of North Carolinians know about NC Promise and only 18% about the fixed tuition program. This campaign will help change that. Through broadcast, radio, and digital advertisements in all 100 counties, we are educating our citizens on their options for an affordable education just as students are filling out FAFSAs and investigating options. We've created a dedicated website, northcarolina.edu/wepromise, which serves as a one-stop shop for the campaign. This campaign will help build the college-going culture that our state needs. Because college must be affordable and within reach for all families if we are to power North Carolina and empower every North Carolinian.
That's UNC System President Margaret Spellings. She's explaining a new $1 million campaign. It promotes two cost-saving measures for prospective UNC students and their parents. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
A commitment to truth and transparency in government. That is the mission of Carolina Journal, and we are proud to deliver, and now proud to tell you the North Carolina Press Association has honored two members of our team with awards for reporting and writing. That's right, we really do deliver award-winning journalism. We shine the light on government spending, reveal the truth about boondoggles, and dig deep into programs paid for with your tax money. We keep you in the know in a way other media outlets don't. And our reach and influence are growing. Through all of our outlets, we reach more than 1 million North Carolinians each month. So make sure you're one of them. Our monthly print edition arrives in your mailbox every month. Our online daily news site, CarolinaJournal.com, has fresh stories, opinion pieces, and more. The award-winning Carolina Journal team, our reporters make government accountable to you. Call 1-866-JLF-INFO for your free subscription.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Mitch Kokai. North Carolina earned some unwanted national attention when the State Elections Board refused to certify election results in the 9th Congressional District. Board members noted concerns about mail-in absentee ballots in the race, especially from Bladen County. While the board investigated, three Republican state senators responded. Tommy Tucker reminded a room full of reporters that he's retiring from the General Assembly.
I'll be a private citizen. So the only interest I have in this and in Bladen County and the election irregularities is the integrity of my party. We need to drive voter fraud out of the state. If Republicans committed fraud, they need to be held accountable. In fact, we need to hold our own accountable. The same is true for the Democrats. If they commit voter fraud, they need to hold themselves accountable. Any fraud is unacceptable in the state. The Board of Elections, through its ineptness and ability to be able to transparently and without partisanship, even in the Perdue, McCrory, and Cooper administrations, to resolve these issues of election irregularity, we need to call upon the governor to help us. When I see allegations of fraud against Republicans again, it makes me sick. We need to get to the bottom of this in a transparent and bipartisan way. Bladen County has had a long history of absentee ballot fraud, even in both parties. So we are being once again embarrassed in this state that our elections don't count, and people's votes don't count, and all votes should be counted. And we need integrity in our elections in North Carolina, and it needs to be done in a bipartisan, transparent, and expedient manner to get this issue resolved. The governor, we believe, needs to establish a bipartisan task force to investigate 2018 election in Bladen County and any irregularities and every other allegation of voter fraud in Bladen County, even back to 2016. Fraud isn't a partisan issue, and investigations into fraud does not need to be investigated by partisans. So through this effort, we're calling on the governor to help us out so that we can have integrity in resolving this issue.
Fellow Republican Senator Dan Bishop of Mecklenburg County echoed Tucker's interest in a bipartisan investigation outside of the Elections Board process.
There must be an investigation into the years of alleged absentee ballot by mail fraud activities in Bladen that is prompt, thorough, transparent, and nonpartisan. As news reports have told us all, troubling allegations have been leveled literally for years in Bladen County. In fact, Board of Elections, Vice Chairman then, now Chairman Joshua Malcolm, said the elections officials have known about the issue for years when he moved not to certify the results in the District 9 congressional election. It's apparent in statistical anomalies that all of us can see. The Cooper election result in 2016, he had a 30-point advantage in absentee ballot by mail over other results in Bladen County. The superintendent of public instruction race in 2016, the Democratic candidate donated to what you all know, the Bladen County Improvement Association, so-called. He won overall vote by 5 points in that county. ABM, he won by 46 points. You can go back to the 2014 Hagen-Tillis race, an extremely close vote in Cumberland County, but Hagen won the ABMs in Bladen 74% to 26%. Bladen has one-tenth the population of Cumberland County, for example, but Hagen was credited with more absentee ballot by mail votes from Bladen than from Cumberland, 668 to 525. There have been complaints, we now know, about absentee ballot by mail activity in Bladen in 2010, 2014, 2016, and then, of course, the terribly disheartening news reports this year in 2018 ninth congressional district race. It is equally clear that over that period of time, authorities have failed to get to the bottom of the problem, certainly not in a transparent manner, notwithstanding this history. So the problem's not being solved by prosecutorial authorities so far, and certainly not by the State Board of Elections over three administrations. But what we cannot have going forward from this point is an investigative and enforcement effort or process that has a partisan taint. That could dramatically worsen the situation.
Senator Paul Newton joined his colleagues in calling for an outside review of the circumstances surrounding Bladen County's absentee ballots.
I assure you that all of us on this side of the podium are troubled and saddened to be here today. But it's an issue that we need to bring even more acutely to your attention. So Governor Cooper has been a lawyer long enough to recall when Canon 9 of the North Carolina Rules of Professional Conduct admonished every attorney in the state of North Carolina to avoid even the appearance of impropriety in the representation of their clients. We believe the citizens of North Carolina deserve to have the appearance of impropriety erased from our state's elections. This is not an effort to inject partisanship into a major investigation. It's quite the opposite. There's been a pattern of irregularities in Bladen County, and perhaps more broadly, that at the very least raises questions about results for candidates for both parties over multiple election cycles. And for the many reasons Senator Bishop articulated, the Democratic Party has a conflict of interest in leading this investigation. The only proper way to investigate potential voter fraud involving both parties is to appoint a fully bipartisan task force. The participants, the process, and the product of the Bladen County investigations must inspire confidence that North Carolina will not tolerate any fraud on behalf of any candidate, regardless of political party. And that is why we're calling for transparency. We're calling for a fully bipartisan task force to lead the investigation. And finally, that the investigation be broad enough, have a broad enough scope to satisfy the concerns of all North Carolinians.
Who would lead this bipartisan investigation? The senators didn't offer the governor specifics, but Tommy Tucker suggested one person who would be willing to serve.
37 years of my life, I've been a Democrat. 31 years, I've been a Republican. You don't get more bipartisan than that. And I would, to the governor, offer my services as a volunteer to be able to be on this bipartisan task force. I think many of you know that I've always tried to call it like I see it. Facts don't have feelings, and we need to look at the facts. And we look at facts on very much the Republican side, the allegations that we have now, and to look at the Democrat allegations and to see exactly what's going on in Bladen County so we can remedy this from happening in the future. And that's what this is all about. It's been going on since 2010 and probably beyond that even. So we need to fix it. We need to transparently do it. We need to resolve the issue so that the citizens of North Carolina have the confidence to know that their vote was counted and that the election results were true and factual.
That's Tommy Tucker, retiring state senator, one of three Charlotte area senators calling for the governor to appoint a new bipartisan commission to investigate allegations of voter fraud. They affected North Carolina's 9th District congressional race. We'll return with more Carolina Journal Radio in a moment.
This week's edition of Carolina Journal Radio is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, working every day to transform the health system for North Carolinians. More information available at todaywe.com.
Voters have spoken in North Carolina. How can you make sense of what they said about the legislature, Congress, the courts, the Constitution? Carolina Journal has you covered. In print each month, online every day. Carolina Journal is your source for up-to-the-minute information about North Carolina state government policies and their impact on you. Carolina Journal offers in-depth analysis of the election's aftermath, then looks ahead to 2019. How will elections affect your family, your wallet, your schools, your business? Find out in the free Carolina Journal newspaper, online at carolinajournal.com. Carolina Journal, your number one source for government news that affects you. Visit carolinajournal.com today.
Welcome back to Carolina Journal Radio. I'm Donna Martinez. State lawmakers this year appropriated $35 million to address school safety issues. Legislators also formed a special school safety committee. The funding and the committee came in the wake of the February shooting at a high school in Florida that unfortunately left 17 students dead at a gunman's hand. Now, this month, the special safety committee submitted its recommendations. Lindsay Marcello is associate editor at Carolina Journal. She joins us now to talk about those. Lindsay, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Lindsay, what's been done with that $35 million so far?
So that money has been used to hire additional school resource officers for all the schools in the state. And the school resource officers are essentially police officers in the school that act as security for the students. The money has also been used to hire additional mental health support, which would be like school counselors, social workers, school nurses. And the money has also, I think, been used to upgrade the security systems in all the schools. So that's video surveillance, that's electric locked doors sort of things. But there's still a lot of work left to be done.
Definitely. And why that is one reason that this committee came up with some recommendations, because mm-hmm. people feel that we've only made the down payment on this
right.
safety issue. The committee, and you covered the meeting, they made some recommendations, and they're really interesting and filled with some important stuff to talk about. So let's go through them. First of all, mental health screening. What do they want to do?
So what they wanted to do is when a student comes to a new school or joins the school system, they would have to undergo a mental health screening to test to see, like, Are they depressed? Are they anxious? Do they have a personality disorder? To see, like, what are the potential triggers that could lead to an issue at the school. So the idea is they would screen every single student, so not to pick out or any other student and to stigmatize them. This way they could do it to everyone, and so they would avoid issues of violating an individual's privacy. They'd avoid the issue of looking like they're profiling someone. So they would do it for every single student. But I think there are some finer details that still need to be worked out. I mean, would this be for all schools? Would it be for all grade levels? I'm not sure yet. And I think that's something that legislators are still trying to figure out.
One would presume that there might be some pushback on that.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, mental health is a very sensitive subject. And, you know, kids are growing up. They're changing. I mean, they may have some sort of issues that will be highlighted with the screening, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be troublemakers down the line.
Right. It could be that they are just transitioning from being a young child
right.
into puberty, et cetera. You never know. And so that's going to be a fascinating one to watch mm-hmm. as that goes forward. What is considered to be a problem issue
right.
and what is just normal. Another recommendation, Lindsay, gets to the heart of civic responsibility. What did they mean when they put this in?
Yeah, I was really surprised to see that one there because I wasn't quite sure what the connection to school safety was there. But Representative Torbett was talking about how this would kind of get to the root of the issue, perhaps, like to teach kids about, you know, keeping an eye on each other and engaging with each other in a responsible manner and to be able to point out to teachers if there is a problem. But it's also part of it would be teaching students to be respectful of authority figures, of their teachers, of the SROs in schools. It would be about teaching them about the importance of school safety and about avoiding conflicts. There's also a lot of details there that still need to be worked out, like how would they fit this into the current curriculum? Because there were some concerns at the committee hearing that we're requiring too much to be taught at school. There's not enough room to kind of add this additional lesson into the what is already there.
Interesting that you mentioned the word conflict, and unfortunately, this does occur.
Yeah.
And should conflict or some sort of violence occur, there's also a recommendation from the committee about first aid training.
Right. Yeah. So schools already teach first aid training to an extent. I think high schools already teach like CPR and the Heimlich maneuver in their health classes. But this would add teaching students about how to use external defibrillators and how to use bleeding control kits.
Now, that's a fascinating phrase. Mm-hmm. Talk more about that, bleeding control. I mean,
so
that's
there was a report that came out, I'm not sure exactly when, but it was saying that one of the leading causes of deaths in the school shootings was bleeding out. And that students, they don't know how to control the bleeding of another student. Teachers don't know how to do it either. I imagine most people don't know how to control bleeding. So I think this is one of the ways to mitigate the damages if there is, unfortunately, if there is an event like a school shooting.
You mentioned earlier, Lindsay, that the appropriation that's already occurred, some of that money has gone to hardening mm-hmm. the facilities with security. There's also a recommendation that more grants come to the schools. Mm-hmm. They obviously feel they need more money.
Right. These grants would also go to school resource officers. A lot of schools, they share a school resource officer with their other neighboring schools. There's a lot of elementary schools don't have an SRO that's always in the school. So this school safety grant would look at the counties that are in need for more SROs, and it would provide reoccurring funds for them. I think for 2018, they've already approved like $30 million for that. And then it would, in 2019, that would jump up to like $53 million. And that would be both reoccurring and non-reoccurring funds.
Now, last year, there was some legislation that was discussed but apparently didn't mm-hmm. go forward, and that is now resurrected by
right.
this committee.
This includes a lot of little, what I think most people would say would be like finer details. There'd be a threat assessment team. They would look at what to do in the case of an emergency. The schools would have to develop a plan for how to handle that. I believe there was something for a vulnerability assessment for buildings, for school buildings. There was another plan for in a county, the local board would come up with a standard state of emergency plan, and then all the schools in that county would have to comply with that standard and come under that standard. So these are just like little catch-alls that just didn't quite gain traction last session, but maybe we'll see a reemergence now.
Now that they've made their recommendations, does this committee go away, or are we going to see more of this?
We're going to definitely see more of this. They have an interest in continuing studying this. That was one of the last recommendations, was to continue studying this issue in 2019. And they expressed actually an interest in bringing in the Senate as well and having a joint committee instead of just being the House.
One of the interesting and fascinating things actually about the story that you wrote about this committee and their recommendations, which, by the way, you can find at carolinajournal.com, was the comments made by an official from the Charlotte-Mecklenburg system. Why did legislators hear from this person? What was the message?
There was a school in Charlotte-Mecklenburg County that experienced their own sort of school shooting. A student there brought a gun an early morning before school started, and he shot another student. It was a tragic event. I think it ripples were throughout North Carolina about what this great tragedy. But the Charlotte-Mecklenburg school system immediately reacted and started implementing changes. So the superintendent, Clayton Wilcox, he presented these changes to the committee. And these changes included they started doing random screenings, searches of bag searches in all the schools. And once again, they were doing this randomly, so not to profile any individual student. They'd pick a school, and then they would go in and search all the bags for the students to look to see if there were any weapons. They would have increased video surveillance.
We've been talking with Lindsay Marcello. She's written this story. You can read it at carolinajournal.com. That's all the time we have for the program this week. On behalf of Mitch Kokai, I'm Donna Martinez. Hope you'll join us again next week for more Carolina Journal Radio.
This week's edition of Carolina Journal Radio is brought to you by Blue Cross and Blue Shield of North Carolina, working every day to transform the health system for North Carolinians. More information available at todaywe.com.
Carolina Journal Radio is a program of the John Locke Foundation. To learn more about the John Locke Foundation, including donations that support programs like Carolina Journal Radio, send email to development@johnlocke.org or call 1-866-JLF-INFO. That's 1-866-553-4636.
Carolina Journal Radio is a co-production of the John Locke Foundation, North Carolina's free market think tank, and Carolina Broadcasting System, Incorporated. All opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of advertisers or the station. For more information about the show or other programs and services of the John Locke Foundation, visit johnlocke.org or call us toll-free at 866-JLF-INFO. We'd like to thank our wonderful radio affiliates across North Carolina and our sponsors. From all of us at Carolina Journal Radio, thank you for listening, and please join us again next week.